Welcome to the December installment of Industrial Heating's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast, underwritten by Solar Manufacturing, leaders in the design and manufacture of leading technology vacuum furnaces for a wide variety of thermal processes. Solar Manufacturing, on the web at www.solarmfg.com. This month's podcast is the second of two on temperature uniformity surveys for vacuum furnaces. Jim Nagy, president of Solar Manufacturing, and Solar Manufacturing founder and CEO and ASM fellow Bill Jones discuss some of the details involved when actually conducting a uniformity survey. Stay tuned at the end of this 13-minute podcast for information about two web-based resources that will help you with your uniformity surveys. And now, here's Jim Nagy.
Last time we were together, our podcast centered on a discussion regarding temperature uniformity surveys, and we will continue that discussion today with Bill and talk about how a TUS is performed and some of the intricacies of using the TUS in your heat treating business. Okay, so let's walk through a typical TUS procedure. A maintenance tech has completed all the preliminary preparations. Describe for us what he or she needs to remember or to do as they move through this procedure. Let's say the survey fixture is in place, it's in the furnace, all the thermocouples are inserted into the proper locations. Are we ready to go to close the door and hit process cycle start?
Yes, we are ready to start. Before actually closing the door and starting, it's wise to take one final last look around the furnace that all the thermocouples are properly in place, that the thermocouples are all properly routed. A comment about that, my preference is that all the thermocouples would be of the same length and that they would all be in the hot zone and not some placed in the hot zone and others that are too long curled up in the cold space. So that there are some procedures about thermocouple placements that I think should be followed. The plugs have to be checked to make sure the plugs are all solid and that there's no contamination of those thermocouple plugs or the blocks. So yes, if all the thermocouples are in place and you're ready to go, you close the door and you pump the furnace down to the generally into the high vacuum range, which is where we run most vacuum furnaces, or certainly at the lower end of the micron range, say something less than 100 microns. And then you can turn the power on to the hot zone and you can start the program and you're ready to go.
Now, as you're ramping up to temperature, you want to go to a certain temperature point. What are those points and how are they determined?
The temperature survey points are going to be dependent on the use of the furnace, what class you're going to be in, and of course the final application. There are some furnaces that could be possibly dedicated to one particular process and one particular temperature, and therefore it would only need to be surveyed at that specific temperature point. Possibly you would survey one or two points ahead of the final process temperature, just to ensure that all things are operating properly on the way up. But a temperature survey can start at 300 degrees Fahrenheit and go at 200 degree intervals all the way up to the highest temperature. Generally, we don't like to run with the either type K or type N thermocouples more than 2150 degrees Fahrenheit. There are other applications, however, where we will survey actually at 2400 degrees or 2500 degrees Fahrenheit using platinum thermocouples. So here again, it all depends on the application and the end use.
So as we're approaching a certain temperature point in the survey, what's important for the operator to observe and to be wary of as they approach that temperature point?
The temperature uniformity survey has to be run in accordance with the way the actual furnace process is to be performed. So, with a normal furnace operating procedure, it's on a program. So we are ramping up to a temperature, and then we come to a soak point, and then we go to the next ramp, and then to the next soak point. So really, once the furnace has been pre-programmed and all the settings are in place, it's very possible that all you need to do is to press the start button on the programmer and run the entire cycle according to the pre-program, and then look at the results. This can take a full 24-hour day, depending on how many soak points that you have. But one of the survey criteria is overshoot issues. And these are particularly critical at the lower end. For instance, say down at these low temperatures like 300, 600, up to say 1400 degrees Fahrenheit or so. Because it's easy to ramp too fast or not have proper approach temperatures and have an overshoot. If you have an overshoot condition, that overshoot temperature condition has to be less than the class furnace. So for example, if you're looking at this class 2, which is plus or minus 10 degrees, you cannot have any of the thermocouples, control couple or survey couples, overshoot by more than 1 degree. So for instance, if you go to 11 degrees and you are 1 degree over, you just failed the process.
So then what happens after that? If you've overshot your temperature point, what happens then with the procedure?
Good question. Actually, you have to start the survey all over again, certainly, and make some adjustments to the, generally it would be to the tuning constants or to the ramp rates of the furnace. This can be an exasperating experience.
Well, how do we know if the furnace has passed the survey?
Well, you look at the final recorder data, and then you carefully analyze all the digital data, and you plot it out on a big Excel spreadsheet, and someone spends a couple of hours reviewing that data at each temperature survey point and finding out where you're under, where you're over, and so forth. So it's all on the digital recorder. And it, of course, in today's world, it has to be a digital recorder so that you can very accurately look at these temperatures. That is the determination.
Now, what do we do with that information once we've concluded a survey on any particular day? What does the business do with the data that they've collected?
The data is carefully filed and stored. If you're part of the NADCAP program, we have regular inspection procedures. And generally the auditor, when he comes in to look at your furnaces and which ones are certified, he will look at those temperature surveys if they have been recorded properly. So the data is very important to keep. Sometimes a customer will request that survey data. So it has to be maintained. We maintain it digitally. It's on file. We don't keep paper per se, but it has to be stored in a very safe condition.
So, Bill, we have an operator or a furnace tech doing a survey, and he's doing everything right, and they just cannot get the furnace to pass the survey. What do we do in those cases? What should he or she do when they just cannot get the furnace to pass the survey as it should?
Well, as we've said here in this discussion, these temperature uniformity surveys can be sometimes a challenge, and with certain furnaces. Many furnaces, depending on the operating temperatures and so forth, the temperature uniformity surveys are rather easy and they're not difficult. However, when one fails, it becomes an issue, obviously. So generally speaking, it's in the lower temperature ranges where the problems occur. That is, trying to survey down at 300 or 600 degrees or even up into the 1,000 degree temperature range. These are the troublesome temperatures. The first thing to take a look at, and you're right, the technician who's performed the survey is going to come up to a higher technical authority, usually within the company or possibly with an outside agency. One would normally look at the thermocouples first. That would be the first area of suspicion. Maybe take all the thermocouples out and change them. And then the other issue is the placement of the thermocouples. Within the extremes of the hot zone, how the thermocouples are faced, or pointed, as I like to say, all those can become considerations. Although we didn't talk about it, whether the thermocouples are in heat sinks and or how they're exposed, this all again gets back to what is being run in that particular furnace. It may be necessary to reduce the size of the operating zone of that furnace. In other words, let's say a standard furnace, which might be 24 inches square and 36 inches deep, and that's a typical size or even larger. So it may be you have to reduce the size of the envelope to maybe 20 by 20 by 30 and pull the thermocouples in away from the outer areas of the hot zone, which could possibly run hotter or cooler. The other thing is most furnaces have trim controls, and you can adjust the furnace power front to back or what have you. It may even be, if the furnace has been modified in some way, that you have to add an extra zone to the furnace. It all depends on the circumstances and what has occurred, and it can be an interesting challenge.
Thanks for listening, and plan on listening to the February 2014 installment for more practical vacuum furnace operating and maintenance information. Solar Manufacturing is the company bringing you this helpful information. Solar would like to have the opportunity to work with you on your current or future vacuum furnace needs. That can include new furnace design, construction and installation, rebuilding hot zones, or rebuilding entire furnace systems. Trust Solar Manufacturing on the web at www.solarmfg.com. And now, as promised at the beginning of this podcast, here are two helpful resources for performing temperature uniformity surveys. Link to www.solarmfg.com/TUS, the number one, and www.solarmfg.com/TUS, the number two, and download both technical resources. Both of these resources help vacuum furnace operators understand how to properly perform temperature uniformity surveys. Or you can send an email to Doug@solarmfg.com and request TUS1 and TUS2. That's Doug@solarmfg.com. Thanks for listening.